You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm or Madison Computer Works and great sponsors like AMS. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation join us. John, there's so much to get to and there's so much fun. I'm going to let you pick. Do you want to start out with Donald Trump talking about Kim Jong-un? Would you like Donald Trump talking about Andrew Jackson? Would you like Donald Trump talking about that he doesn't stand by his words? Where would you like to go today?
As a patriot, I got to go with Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson. By the way, have you been to the Hermitage?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, as a kid, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We were taken down there to see an example of what could happen.
Okay, so let's talk about Donald Trump and his comments about. It looks like I got to make sure that I have the sheet. I've got such a list of Trump clips here; it's unbelievable.
Well, can we just pause for a second? I think that's a way to start this out, right? Is to say that somebody let Donald Trump do like three interviews in a 24-hour, 36-hour period.
Yeah,
and that's an incredibly dangerous thing. Because not for Trump, mind you. Not a problem for Trump. It's a problem for media because they literally can't manage it.
Right.
They're like interrupting themselves. Yeah, yeah, but he just said he wants to meet with, the North Korean guy. Yeah, yeah, but he just, says the Civil War was unnecessary. I mean, it's like, how do you deal with that?
How many quotes do you remember from Gerald Ford or Jimmy Carter?
I think there was something about a malaise.
Oh, yeah.
With both of them, actually.
Remember Ford's whip inflation now buttons, his win buttons?
Win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. And then the other thing I loved about Ford was, that the only long speech he ever gave, which was trying to explain pardoning Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
I'm taking a few days off. I'm going up to Sault Ste. Marie, but I'm actually taking the car ferry over to Michigan, and I'm going up on the Traverse City side. But first, I'm going to Grand Rapids, and I'm going to visit the Gerald Ford Presidential Library.
That is a totally cool thing to do, because he's actually a pretty good president. And isn't, his house, his boyhood home?
Well, his boyhood home would have been Omaha.
Mm-mm, not there. No, later.
A little later on. Yeah, he was born in Omaha and then adopted. He was not born with the name Ford.
No, it's some other name. But I think the house that he lived in, and wherever he lived in Michigan, and I don't want to...
I'll let you know. He's the only president who has his library in one city and his museum in the other.
Well, I just want to say that there was a great story. Like, when he was really old, I think one of his childhood homes, the neighborhood was gentrifying, and I hope I've got this right. I think there was a gay couple that had... bought the house, and they were renovating it and stuff like that, and they wrote him a letter or something, and I think it was him. He wrote back this lovely letter, saying how cool it is and how great you're to keep it, and stuff like that. It was this really nice, great guy.
Well, and frankly, he let the Beatles into the White House.
Yeah, although he was not as good at letting rockers in as Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter let people smoke weed at the White House. Well, or at least he looked the other way.
I don't know that he let them. It just kind of happened.
All right, here is Donald Trump. Here is Donald Trump talking about the 7th president of the United States, Andrew Jackson.
I mean, had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart, and he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. People don't ask that question, but why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out?
I've never asked that question.
No.
Ever in my life. Ever. And even my right-wing aunt and uncle took me to Cherokee country in North Carolina and took me to all the Trail of Tears monuments. And I learned at maybe 11 years old that Andrew Jackson was not a good man.
Yeah, I think I had the same experience. Did you also include a little quick trip over to Gatlinburg?
I have not been to Gatlinburg.
I think that's how all the pieces came together.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Donald Trump and his sudden fondness for Andrew Jackson. Whenever you look at a picture in the Oval Office, President Jackson's picture is hanging right over his left shoulder.
Yeah, in a much bigger form than Abraham Lincoln, I might know.
Yeah, interesting.
So here's the deal. There's a lot of ways to kind of work down this list. And, you know, it's hard to know exactly where to begin. But I like to begin with the president's interview with Tucker Carlson back in March, where Tucker asked him what, you know, like, because they'd run out of questions or something, like, what books are you reading, right? And the president goes, you know, I really try to read. I love to read. But, you know, every time I start reading a book, you know, I only get, like a paragraph or so onto the first page, and then the phone rings or something distracts me, right? So the guy's acknowledging that he can't read more than a page of a book. And he mentions that the book he's been trying to read unsuccessfully is a biography of Andrew Jackson. So right off the bat, I think we've established that he's probably not going to be honored by, you know, the Andrew Jackson Scholars Association for his knowledge of the former president. And that's good, because every indication is he knows nothing about Andrew Jackson. First off, that Andrew Jackson died 16 years before the Civil War.
You are so picky.
Well, yeah, it's just that a lot...
You know, that's just snippy. That's just snippy of you. That's not fair, John.
Let's be a little... Well, then let's go to the next step. He was out of office and out of public life 25 years before the Civil War started. And his tenure as president of the United States, in addition to, you know, what Native Americans refer to as genocidal treatment of the Cherokee, in addition to that, his track record on slavery was not exactly great. As president, right, we're not talking about personal stuff. As president, he cracked down on abolitionists who were trying to communicate about the horrors of slavery. Literally, they were trying to they tried to make it harder for abolitionists to talk about slavery, right? And he referred to abolitionists as monsters, right? He hated people trying to end slavery. So, with all due respect, right off, just with that information on the table, I think we can establish that if Trump is going with the Andrew Jackson method for avoiding the Civil War, there's a pretty good argument that his model for avoiding the Civil War was trying to find some kind of compromise with human bondage.
Here is
cool. And then one final element, if I could. not that I've thought about this. But
no, of course not.
There's one final element of this. Andrew Jackson was a major slaveholder. He had 150 slaves.
Uh-huh.
And
your problem with that is? You do understand, essentially, slave labor built Trump Tower. So what's the difference?
Well, look, Andrew Jackson practiced human bondage, okay? And now this
and Donald Trump didn't pay the Polish immigrants.
There you go. But here's where it gets interesting, Sly, okay? Because I realize a president practicing human bondage is not doesn't make him an outlier, necessarily. There are others, right? But this is the thing that makes Andrew Jackson unique. When Andrew Jackson had a runaway slave, he put an ad in the paper, which historians have found, in which he said, you know, give you $50 if you return this slave, this male slave that for some reason wanted to leave my plantation. And then there's a little codicil at the bottom of it, and $10 more for every, I think it was $10 more, I hope I got the number right, for every 100 lashes, up to $300.
Nice.
Do you know how much brutality?
Yeah, that's shredding someone, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, how much you would have to, how horrible you'd have to be to even entertain that notion.
Yeah.
And this is Andrew Jackson. Mm-hmm. So with all due respect, for President of the United States to say that Andrew Jackson saw the Civil War coming and would have avoided it, you know, or in some kind of way, the only way this guy would have avoided it, as far as I can tell, is to follow the lead of his protege, right? The guy that he was closest to went on to become president, and that's James K. Polk, who literally got us into a war with Mexico to spread the slave power.
Here is John Meacham, who's written a book on Andrew Jackson, talking about Donald J. Trump.
Well, what he's done, and this goes to what we're talking about, is he's taking two unrelated things, largely unrelated things, and sort of smashing them together like a couple of blocks. One is this newfound interest in Andrew Jackson, which largely comes from Steve Bannon. I spent about an hour and a half with him in May of 16 talking about presidents he admired, and Jackson never came up. Steve Bannon put this in the conversation after the victory, saying this was a Jacksonian moment. I think the president was down here in Nashville. He later a wreath at the tomb, sort of associated himself with
right,
the great populist.
But John, have you ever had a student? Have you ever had a person at a book event? And I'm serious. Have you ever had an adult say to you, people don't ask the question about why we had a civil war? Like, or why did we have to have that civil war thing?
It only comes up, and you know these folks too, it comes up in neo-Confederate circles, right? People who argue, oh, it was states' rights, it wasn't slavery, which is completely wrong. There's a whole level of scholarship. Mika, get ready.
I was just about to say, land this plane now.
Exactly. But there's an interesting set of questions about, could the war have been delayed? Lincoln was willing to allow slavery to exist but not expand. But that's not what President Trump was talking about. He was not worried about the Crittenden Compromise of the winter of 1860-61. What is happening, I think, is these different dots get connected, often wrongly, in his head. And why, just out of curiosity, I throw this back to you all, why would we expect anything different?
I know.
Are you telling me Donald Trump didn't know anything about the Crittenden Compromise?
I have to say that, first off, this woman who interviewed Trump, who's, you know, not exactly a hard player as regards Trump.
You speak up just a little bit, John?
This woman who interviewed Trump.
Yeah.
Who hasn't, you know, maybe didn't do the toughest interview ever there. You know, they're sort of like, it sounded a little bit on the friendly side. But she drew something out of that guy that was pretty remarkable. And the only criticism I would have at all would be that there really should have been a follow-up on it, right? And the follow-up would have been, how would you have avoided the Civil War? You know, putting yourself in Jackson's shoes there. What do you think the strategy would have been for avoiding it? Because there's no good answer to that, right? It's not the Crittenden Compromise or something like that, because you realize that the Civil War was not something that Lincoln sought, right? I mean, Lincoln was not thrilled with this. He was looking for alternatives, but there was no moral road out in 1860-1861, right? There was no, you know, because we had put off dealing with a sin for too long, right? Slavery's a sin. And it's inhumane at the most, you know, fundamental levels. And it is horrific that the United States allowed this to occur.
John, we gotta move on. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at slysoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
John Nichols from the Capital Times in the Nation with us at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. All right, it's time for me to pick my favorite clip of Donald Trump.
You mean you didn't go with Andy Jackson?
Well, Andy Jackson's really good, but this one... John Dickerson, who's a legitimate journalist, who does Face the Nation show on Sundays, got under Donald Trump's skin a little bit.
Did President Obama give you any advice that was helpful? That you think, wow, he was
very nice to me, but after that, we've had some difficulties. So it doesn't matter. You know, words are less important to me than deeds. And you saw what happened with surveillance, and everybody saw what happened with surveillance.
Difficulties how?
I thought that. Well, you saw what happened with surveillance, and I think that was inappropriate.
What does that mean, sir?
You can figure that out yourself.
Well, the reason I asked is you said you called him sick and bad.
Look, you can figure it out yourself. He was very nice to me with words, and when I was with him, but after that, there has been no relationship.
But you stand by that claim about him?
I don't stand by anything. I just, you can take it the way you want. I think our side's been proven very strongly, and everybody's talking about it, and frankly, it should be discussed. I think that is a very big surveillance of our citizens. I think that's a very big topic, and it's a topic that should be number one, and we should find out what the hell is going on.
I just wanted to find out, though, you're the president of the United States. You said he was sick and bad because he attacked you.
You can take it any way you want.
But I'm asking you, because you don't want it to be fake news. I want to hear it from President Trump.
Me. You don't have to ask me.
Why not?
Because I have my own opinions. You can have your own opinions.
But I want to know your opinions. You're the president of the United States.
That's enough. Thank you.
Whoa!
Did you think that was... I mean, I really respect John Dickerson. I think he's very, very good. Do you think it was...
Can you speak up a little bit, John? Yeah.
I really respect John Dickerson. He sounded really good there. But I thought toward the end of it, Was there like a sadness in his voice? Or a sorrow, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Like,
oh, I...
You're the president of the United States.
Oh, it's... it's not good.
It was really sad. I mean, and not because of anything. It was just a tragic circumstance that you're standing there with the guy, and he's saying, well, you know, don't try to put my words on me. Don't try to hold me to what I just said.
I don't stand by anything.
I know. It's like, that's going to go down. I think that's got a place in the history books, don't you? Maybe that's...
I think that beats malaise, John.
Yeah, I do. And you know what I think that could be? Here's my view. I think that could be the title of, you know, some book on the incoherence of the Trump years. Right? You know, there'll be many books on the Trump years, and they'll say a lot of different things. But I think that, you know, that gets to this guy because I genuinely think he sort of means it, that he doesn't stand by anything. And the problem of it is, this is the problem.
Do you even have to say what the problem is?
No, there's a bigger problem. Because what he does is dog whistle, right? He says things that he intends for his supporters and allies to hear in a certain way. And then he is smart enough to know that he doesn't want to be held to that because he's got no proof, no nothing to support himself. And so, you know, when he gets in this situation where somebody follows up on his dog whistle and says, well, what exactly are you trying to do there? You know, what's your subtext? What's your message? And I want to hear it in your words. He's suddenly like, don't be trying to make me explain what I'm saying here.
Well,
I'm just the president.
That's one explanation. Mika, as he would say, Mika Brzezinski, who's played all sorts of games over the last couple of years with Donald Trump, is saying this about the president now.
We're going to say what maybe no one said. We'll do it again. I'm not sure he's okay.
Well, I mean, look, I think there's a couple of things.
I'm not sure he's okay. You have that feeling with people
right.
who
yeah.
are not okay, where it starts to dawn on you That they are not
that
okay.
That it's getting worse. That it's getting worse. And
that's a much bigger issue.
Worse than it has been. And you talk about the AP interview and these other interviews. The president of the United States saying, gee, this is a lot harder than my last job was. There's not a human being on the face of the earth that wouldn't understand that you were stepping into the most difficult job of your life. Just look at pictures of presidents walking in and walking out of the White House.
Why would he age? This president doesn't have a concern in the world.
Not taking it too seriously. Well, there was the other, you know, of all the interviews, right? The one where he was talking about how it turned out to be a lot harder than he thought was an interesting one, you know. And in fairness, he's not the first president to say that. Remember that some of those interviews with George W. Bush, where he kept saying how hard it was.
It's hard work.
President,
it's hard work.
Hard. Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes you get...
Yeah, he's not going to go down as a good president.
George W. Bush?
Yeah.
Well, he's looking better now. But the weird thing about it is that these people who assume the presidency because of privilege rather than because of their abilities are often surprised that it turns out to be a hard job, right? Because they got it too easily. And that's an important thing to understand. George W. Bush and Donald Trump have one thing in common. Both of them are the sons of wealth, right, who had their ways in the world paved by their father's money and by, you know, all sorts of people who made sure that things worked for them. You know what George W. Bush and Donald Trump have in common?
I don't even venture to guess.
They both ran their businesses into the ground repeatedly and were bailed out. Right? They failed.
All right, let's move on to Kim Jong-un. Here is Donald Trump.
If it would be appropriate for me to meet with him, I would be honored to do it. Most political people would never say that, but I'm telling you, under the right circumstances, I would meet with him.
Well,
what do you make of the North Korean leader?
I really have no comment on him. People are saying, is he sane? I have no idea. He's dealing with obviously very tough people, in particular the generals and others. And at a very young age, he was able to assume power. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else. And he was able to do it. So obviously, he's a pretty smart cookie.
Okay, so he's a smart cookie because he blew his uncle up with anti-aircraft missiles. And killed his half-brother with some sort of poison at the airport in, I don't know, where was that, Malaysia?
Yeah, with people like in comic book t-shirts.
Right. Yeah. And he'd be honored to meet him.
Smart cookie. Well, you know,
can you imagine if Barack Hussein Obama had said that?
Well, here's an interesting thing. As a candidate for president, Barack Obama did say that he'd be willing to meet with folks to try and, he didn't, you know, run down the names of these folks, but he said he'd be willing to try and meet with folks to try and negotiate.
Yes, and he was crucified, but he didn't say he'd be honored, and he didn't call Ahmadinejad a smart cookie.
No, he didn't say he'd be honored, and he put it very much in the context of American presidents who have met in the past with folks that are not necessarily great players. The problem with Trump here, the bizarre thing with Trump, is that, yes, he said he would be honored, but then Sly gets even weirder, right? Because, you know, I wouldn't, you know, venture a theory on whether he's sane, right? So he's accepted the guy could be, like, off the deep end crazy. But the one thing he kind of knows about the guy and sort of likes about him is that he's a brutal autocrat, right?
Well,
takes care
which
of the-
leads me, oh. Which leads me to this clip.
Oh no!
Talking about the president of the Philippines. I don't know if you pronounce his name Duterte. think I got that right. Okay, here we go.
He's been very, very tough on that drug problem, but he has a massive drug problem.
Do you think he's...
You know, he's very popular in the Philippines. He has a very high approval rating in the Philippines, but he's very popular in the Philippines. I look forward to meeting him. If he comes to the White House, that's fine. I look forward to meeting him.
The man that bragged is when he was mayor of what, Manila? He killed people with his bare hands?
Yeah, I think it was some other town, but...
Well, whatever.
Community. But, first off, I'm a little shaky on how Trump knows how popular this guy is. Because, you know, I'll tell you why.
Frank Luns actually has done some polling in the Philippines.
No doubt, but I just want to say something to you. You know that you got a guy who's in charge who's, like, brags about killing people with his bare hands. And really, like, he's, like, filling the streets with bodies. You get a phone call, says, what do you think about it? I'm not sure the polling is... I'm not confident in the polling, okay? But beyond that, right, it's bad enough. You know. So, yes, here you've got another one, this guy from the Philippines who, you know, we ought to be, you know, talking to about human rights, the rule of law, things like that, but who, in fact, instead Trump is sort of justifying it, right? Well, he's got a pretty bad drug problem there, you know? Stuff like that. Again, it's the same thing he was doing with our North Korean friend. He was sort of saying, "Yo, I don't know a lot about this guy, but what I do know is he's kind of tough." And then you write down the list, Sly. This is what he's done with Erdogan in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Same stuff.
Yeah.
And in Turkey, they are jailing journalists, and you know, just it's a chaotic, horrific.
Well, this is something that should come as a surprise to no one, because when that man was running for president, he, I don't want to say he praised China for Tiananmen Square, but he put it in a far more positive light than I'd ever heard American politicians.
I've heard anyone put it in.
Right.
Including the Chinese leader.
Right.
No, I mean, it's very, very clear that Donald Trump has a... If not a, I won't even go say a penchant. I'll just say he has a disturbing interest in leaders who use their power to force their countries to do things that their countries may not want to do, or who actually use their power to brutalize their own people. Right. This is, it's a, and again, we come full circle, Sly, because we started talking about Andy Jackson. And if you think of an American president who had less regard for the Constitution he swore an oath to than Andy Jackson, I can't think of one. And that includes Richard Nixon, you know, who clearly, you know, didn't put the oath at the top of his list. But Andrew Jackson literally said, when the Supreme Court told him not to do some of the things he was going to do to Native Americans because it was illegal, famously Andrew Jackson is reported to have said, you know, well, have the Supreme Court use its army to stop me, or some variation thereon. And so this is a guy whose regard for the system of checks and balances, separation of powers, and the courts, famously underdeveloped. And so even when Trump goes back through American history to look for, out of 44 presidents, who does he find? Andrew Jackson. Right. Now, admittedly, with Steve Bannon's help.
One more question. We've only got a minute and a half left here. I have a little supposition I'm going to toss out here. I think there is a significant population in America that's so frustrated with inaction in Washington and stalemate that actually kind of think that streak that we're talking about in Donald Trump is a good thing.
Oh, there's always been that, though.
Oh, no. I think this has grown. The fact that he's such an unmitigated disaster, but he still has, you know, close to 40% of Americans with him, leads me to believe that we have a bigger problem than Donald Trump. We have an electorate of a lot of people that have a lot of power, disproportionately because of the electoral system, who simply do not share the vision of previous presidents that America should be a beacon for freedom and justice and honesty. I think there's something deeply wretched about the American soul with about 40% of its public.
Well, I will just tell you.
Do you agree with that or not?
I don't know what portion of Trump's people are desperate and scared and overwhelmed by their circumstance, and what portion really are bad folks. I'm not gonna. Yeah, I can't quite divide that up. I suppose you could do some polling to do it. But what I can tell you is this. We have been here before. And even though our economy is sort of up in some ways, and, you know, we're not really in the midst of a whole bunch of...
No, but it's still a big giant piece of Swiss cheese.
No, but what I'm telling you is this. This is really bad. When we're in this place, Sly, this is usually at the worst of times for America. You know, the 1850s, the 1930s, times when, you know, people
right.
really were so
mm-hmm.
desperate.
Right. No. I know.
And you got to ask yourself, why are they so desperate?
Well,
I think it has something to do. I just want to tell you, I think it has something to do with media.
Well, I was just going to say, you've written a book on this. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.